In Ukraine, Europe's largest power plant remains under threat. The nuclear plant at Zaporizhia lost power twice yesterday before backup generators kicked in. That's according to the UN Nuclear Agency. Meanwhile, Ukrainian forces are struggling to retake cities in the south that are under Russian control. In the south is where we find NPR's Frank Langford. He's in the port city of Odessa. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Scott.
What happened at the power plant? Why did it go out?
Yeah, well, apparently there was a nearby wildfire. I'll be honest with you, it's not that clear. May have been responsible for knocking out the last power line to this plant. This was yesterday. President Zelensky said that the power plant had to turn on diesel backup generators to prevent a disaster. Now, the plant needs external power to operate. And of course, this is most important because it has to cool the nuclear reactors with water. Otherwise, you get a meltdown like you saw in Fukushima. The Russian state media is saying that these wildfires were started by Ukrainian shelling. The Ukrainians say it's the Russians who are responsible. The Russians are in control of the plant. But there's no way to independently verify exactly what's going on because this is a running battle around a nuclear power plant.
Well, as you say, there's been continuous fighting in and around the plant. What would the next step be to prevent a catastrophe?
The UN, the International Atomic Energy Agency, is trying to get inspectors into the plant to look at the damage and also make sure it's operating as safely as possible. And Ukrainians hope that that could happen as early as next week.
Okay. Now, Frank, you're in the south where some of the main fighting in this war is now happening. The Ukrainians want to mount a counteroffensive and take back some territory there. How's it going?
It's going really slowly, Scott. I mean, it's not even a counteroffensive yet. In some places that I've been visiting, it's taken the Ukrainians nearly 4 months to move maybe 7 or 8 miles because we've been in a lot of these places, these villages and areas. Mm-hmm. And the problem they face, I think, is this. You know, the U.S. and NATO has given an enormous number of weapons in the first 6 months of this war, including high-precision rockets.
Yeah.
But every Ukrainian soldier I talk to say they're still outgunned. This is an artillery war basically amid flat farm fields. And the key to taking territory is forcing back the enemy with heavy targeted bombardment. Scott, I was talking to a reconnaissance soldier yesterday. He goes by the nickname Raptor. And he said the Russians, they still have a big advantage.
When we can fire, say, one piece of equipment, they can fire like five or six to counter one piece of artillery from our position. This is the main problem, pretty much. So we have to be more creative and more precise.
Frank, this fighting to many is similar to the trench warfare of World War I. Did you get a sense of what it was like in the trenches?
A little bit, just from talking to these guys, and it's very tough. Both of them had actually served in the trenches earlier on. And because it's an artillery war, their infantry rarely see the enemy. They mostly spend their time digging trenches, hiding from artillery barrages, defending against attack, and maybe mounting assaults when they can manage to. This is how Raptor described his time in the trenches earlier.
You're like constantly shelled. It's really hard mentally because you just don't know if you're gonna like survive. It actually is quite heavy on your mind.
And Scott, I talked to another recon officer who works with Raptor, who also spent time in the trenches. He goes by the nickname Concrete. And he said when the Russians were on the offensive earlier on, the situation was no better.
The heavy cannon shelling in the morning, and after that they're trying to jump in our trenches. The infantry now pays the highest price for this war.
Frank, the group Human Rights Watch yesterday released a report about the use of cluster bombs in this conflict. They were banned by a global treaty in 2010, but Russia and Ukraine didn't agree to sign it. Frank, what are cluster bombs, and have you seen any evidence they are being used?
Yeah, these are often rockets that are launched, and then they spread out all these little bomblets that can maim and kill people many, many years after they're deployed. And Human Rights Watch says nearly 700 civilian casualties from cluster bombs here in Ukraine between February and July. Almost all of them are from Russian forces, but the Ukrainian forces, according to Human Rights Watch, also have used them at least twice. And I saw them actually when I was traveling with the military in Ukrainian territory. One of these missiles, essentially is a rocket, was jammed into the side of a hillside. And of course, it already spread all these cluster bombs. Fortunately, I think they had been cleared along the path, certainly that we took, but they're very, very dangerous. And they can, you know, I've seen cases when I worked in Vietnam where decades after these are released, they can end up injuring particularly children who will pick them up and play with them.
NPR's Frank Langfitt is reporting from Odessa, Ukraine in the south. Frank, thank you as always, and stay safe.
Thanks, Scott. Great to talk.